Excited that it's January for a number of different reasons. Back in 1980, this center was started in 1979 by my teacher and friend, Dr. Kennedy Schultz. Many of you knew him. And in January of 1980, the first January that we existed, and it was actually over on Far Road, I believe, at the time. It was before, no, they were still in the Admiral Benbow Bar at the time, before we, that first January, and it was in the middle of 1980 that we started going, they started coming in this auditorium. But Kennedy, at the time, started the tradition. He didn't start it. He started it down here. He got it from his teacher, Dr. Barker. But practicing the tradition of spending January, the four Sundays in January, teaching, going back over, re-exploring the basic principles of this teaching, which is called the science of mind, for those of you who don't know that. So this actually makes this the 30th January that this has been done. Kennedy has done 20 of them, and this is my 10th. Now, not every religious science center does it around the country if you come from elsewhere, but to me it seemed like an excellent idea because I can always use a refresher, because it never hurts me to be reminded of what I need to know, because it isn't the complicated stuff that I screw up. Whenever I'm having trouble, it's the very basic, simple stuff that I forget. So that's what I always like to go back to, and it's important that we recognize this as we go about the business of creating an interesting life, setting up a better set of experiences for ourselves, and creating a more positive and powerful spiritual foundation for ourselves than we've ever had before. And this holds true whether your life has been a mess over the previous year and you want to make it better, or whether your life has been wonderful over the last year and you want to make it even better that way too. Most of us fall somewhere in between. Because the truth about all of us is that we are meant to continue growing as long as we live. And that means growing in love, growing in joy, growing in health, growing in abundance, and especially growing in spiritual understanding. That's where all the other growth comes from. And whenever it is that we finish what we call this life, this physical life, this level of existence, wherever that is, whatever we're doing there, whatever we look like, whenever we go on in our transition, we will undoubtedly continue to grow there too, because growth is a basic part of the nature of this thing that we call life. Now, the four talks this month are going to be based on the introduction to the book, The Science of Mind, what we call the textbook, written by Dr. Ernest Holmes, who was the founder of this teaching. And the introduction, a lot of people are intimidated by the book because it's about that thick, you know, and they, you know, don't want to touch it. But I tell people that if you just read the first 36 pages, because that's what this introduction is. It's divided into four parts. And in these 36 pages is the essence of this teaching. It's incredibly powerful. And if you read it, I've read it, I probably have read it 100 times. And every time I read it, I get something more out of it. So if you haven't read it in a while, I recommend you reread it. And if you haven't read it at all and you don't want to get the book, I'm sure you can go online and get those pages, because they contain the essence of what we teach here, which is the same thing taught by every great spiritual teacher throughout history. All the men and women who came from every age, every culture, every theological background, all of these teachers, if you get down to the basics, were teaching us exactly the same thing, which makes perfect sense, because the spiritual laws that all the great teachers talked about are the same laws, and they're not just for people of one religion or one teaching. They're for every single person, and they will work just as well for everyone who uses them intelligently. That's what we teach here. So over these 4 weeks, my intent is to remind you and to remind me that our ability to grow and our ability to enjoy life has no limits. That's really the basic premise of what we're going to be talking about, because this power that created us out of itself has no limits for us. Never has and never will. So our belief in limitation, which is what holds us back in so many areas, is purely a human invention. And I think it's time we got over our infatuation with limitation. Because if you listen to people talk, they're constantly talking about what they can't do, why things have to be a certain way in their life, and why they can't change. So today, in the first of the four-part series, what I'm going to be talking about is a different kind of God. And by that, I mean a different idea of God than most of us were raised with or what a lot of people believe. And Dr. Holmes has a name for this God, this idea of God that we're going to be talking about. He calls it the thing itself, which I think is a great name. And then next week, we're going to be talking about how this power works in the world. What is the vehicle that it comes into the world through? On week three, we'll talk about how it actually shows up and how it does what it does in the world. And then on the fourth Sunday, the last Sunday, 3 weeks from today, we're going to talk about how to use it. We're going to talk about how we can make the best use of this power and this teaching in order to produce all the good things in life that we want, and to gain all the things that we've already been given. So let's get started here. First of all, in this idea of this new idea of God, something many people who become interested in this teaching do not realize is that this is actually one of the simplest, most uncomplicated, and straightforward teachings, and it is a very simple way of living. But there's always more to this than we are actually using. There's always more to this. There's more levels, like peeling back an onion, more and more levels to understand. So the more we study this teaching, the more we practice the simple, basic aspects of what it tells us, and the more we open ourselves to what life has to offer, the more we're going to be able to do, have, and accomplish in our life. In other words, it takes a commitment. And if we make a personal commitment, and by that I mean a spiritual commitment, which is the most important kind, to do the things that we need to do, and they aren't that difficult. I mean, you don't have to climb up Stone Mountain on your knees or go without food for a week or all this kind of stuff. All you have to do is the basic simple stuff, which means to start thinking about what we are thinking about, what is going through our mind, and what feelings are we feeding those thoughts with on a regular basis when we are thinking about life, about ourselves, and about God. And if we start to pay attention to the things we're talking about and the things we're thinking about and the things we're buying into, in a very short time, that level of awareness will allow us to start living better and better as the days and the years go by, which is actually quite an accomplishment, because I don't know if you've noticed it, but I certainly have. That is not the case with most people in the world. For most people, their life does not get better as they get older. As they get older, and this includes everyone, even very nice, very friendly, or very religious people, all very nice people, they tend to live more and more limited lives as the days go by and the years go by. Their health deteriorates, we see that, and they believe that's normal. Their money slowly disappears, or if their money accumulates, their ability to enjoy their money starts to decrease. They have fewer and fewer friends that they connect with. Their relationships get weaker, or fewer and fewer close relationships in their life. For most people in the world, the last third of their life is like this constant downhill slide, and they go, that's just the way things are. Instead of being bothered by it, now they may whine about it a little bit, my body's starting to go and this kind of stuff, but instead of being bothered to the point that they actually want to do something like reverse the slide and start having their life be more enjoyable instead of less, they just shrug their shoulders and accept it. And the sad part is, this is what this teaching says, it doesn't have to be that way. Because every single one of us is not only a creation of God, we are more than that. We're not just some piece of clay that has had some divine breath blown into us so we can walk around and talk and suffer through all the problems of our human experience. We're more than that. In fact, every single one of us is a unique spiritual creation. We all come from the same one spirit, but we all express it in a unique and powerful way. But the main difference between those who are enjoying their life and those who are not is the people who are enjoying their life are actually participating in that creative process. Because each one of us is, the philosopher Tagore said that we are all sparks of the divine fire. So the same passionate fire that we call God or spirit, this creative power, exists in us as a spark. So there's never been a person like you in the world, there's never been a person like me, and there never will be again. We have the ability to create our life in a unique way. So every moment that we are alive, this power that is constantly present, everywhere present, never sleeps, never rests, it's constantly creating. It's constantly creating through us by action of our thoughts and our beliefs and emotions. So we're not just a conduit that this power is moving through. We are actually part of the way it works. I'm going to be talking about that a little bit more. And this power will never stop trying to create through us, no matter what we do. But there's a catch. And the catch is we have to be willing to work with it the way it works. That's what we'll talk about next week. You see, in order to intelligently and effectively use this power of life that we all have, we first have to understand what it is. We have to understand where it is coming from, which is from the source of all life, or what we sometimes call God, because that has to be the starting point. And there is something in us, even though we seem to forget it as we get older, there is something in us that knows. It knows that this presence is there and that we are able to do and to be more than we are manifesting in the world. We are born with that knowledge. There's a story that I love with Helen Keller, who is one of my heroes I ever picture in my office. She signifies spiritual courage to me. And the story is told of Helen Keller when she was about 15 or 16 years old. She was born in 1880, so this was in the late 1800s. And at one point, they decided that little Helen needed to learn something about God and religion. I mean, why should she be happy? Let everybody, you know, do what everybody else is doing, all right? So they brought in a man who was one of the best ministers at the time by the name of Phillips Brooks. Isn't that a great name, Dr. Phillips Brooks, for a famous minister? And he came in to teach her about God. So as he was preaching to this deaf and blind girl, I mean, a strange image, her teacher, Annie Sullivan, if you saw the miracle worker, you know that, was doing sign language in Helen's hand. And Helen was sitting there very quietly, paying very rapt attention. So this man was trying as hard as he could to explain to this deaf and blind child about this essence, this spiritual being that was in her, and she had no frame of reference. And all of a sudden, she got really excited, and she starts signing back to them that she had always known about this presence inside of her. She just didn't know its name until now. It's kind of interesting. So we're all like that. We know that that power is in us, every single one of us. So we need to examine our own inner instinctive awareness of what this presence we call God is to us, what it is to us. Because if we're relying on this power, which is greater than we are, to support us and to bring us the ideas and the passion and the emotion that we need to expand our life, we need to be very clear about the nature of that power, because any power can be used well or it can be misused. I remember when I was renovating houses in Midtown, one of the early lessons I found was, you don't go messing around with a fuse box if you don't know nothing about electricity, okay? Now, it can do some great things, but you can also hurt yourself. So with this power, it doesn't hurt us, but we can create circumstances that we don't like very much by not using it the way that we are able to use it. So the first question that we need to ask ourselves in terms of our own spiritual awareness, and we need to re-ask ourselves this question periodically, and once a year is a great amount, if not more often, the first question is, what kind of a God do I believe in? That's the first question. And we need to ask ourselves this because whatever the answer to that question is, whatever we decide that we believe in, that is going to determine the course of our entire life. Our entire life. It's really that important. You see, if God, if this power is the first cause to all things, if it's the ultimate source of all the good, all the growth, all the wonderful things in our life, of our health, of our success, of our abundance, of our healing, of all those different things, then what we are going to be able to accomplish in our life is going to be directly affected by our belief about what this power is willing and able to do for us. In other words, every experience that we have in our life, our relationships, our work, large or small, our relationship with our family, with our children, our prosperity, our abundance, our healing, if we have physical problems, every experience is going to be shaped and colored and formed by our belief in what God is offering to us, by our belief in what this power can and will do for us, and by what rules we think we have to follow in order to get ourselves in connection with it or to get this power to listen to us, which is a funny term because it's always listening. Now, think about it this way. There are a lot of people in the world who would love to have a nice, easy life. I mean, everybody wants that. Everybody wants lots of good friends. Everybody wants enough money to do the things they want to do. Everyone wants a nice, healthy body. Everybody wants this, right? You guys, everybody you know, no matter what their religion or who they happen to be, everybody wants to have work that they love or to be doing something fulfilling in their life. But for some strange reason, probably going back to the way organized religion evolved, the God that most people believe in, this picture of life that they're holding in their consciousness, doesn't bear any resemblance to the life that they really desire. I mean, there was a scene in a Woody Allen movie. I saw it on Netflix about 3 or 4 months ago. I had to go back and watch it again. I had seen it years ago. And he was contemplating the nature of the universe, and somebody asked him what he thought about God. And he said, "I think that we are up against an evil, insidious force that is constantly trying to kill us." You know? That was his, you know, he says, for some irrational, unexplainable reason, this power is always trying to kill us. Now, that's not a very healthy image of a gentle and loving power that always has our best interests at heart. But that's the God that a lot of people believe in. I mean, if that's the kind of God that you believe in, it doesn't make much sense to ask for a loving relationship or to ask for a prosperous future because, this is important, whatever good we bring into our life can never be any greater than our idea of God. It can't be any greater. I mean, we're all aware that there are a lot of perfectly nice people in the world who believe in an old, celibate, straight, male, white God. That's what they believe in, who is frequently angry, extremely hard to please, and very easy to offend. Now, they wouldn't say it that way, but if you ask them, that's how it starts to come out. On top of that, he likes some people better than others, and you're not sure whether you're on his good side or his bad side sometimes. So there's a lot of guessing involved with that kind of God. Now, there's nothing wrong with believing that way any more than there's anything wrong with a child who believes in Santa Claus. It doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean they're dumb. It just means they have a very limited view of what life and God or spirit or whatever name they use is willing to do for them. Because they've convinced themselves that they have to go through all sorts of emotional and mental and spiritual gyrations to convince God that they are worthy of His help. And they're afraid to ask for too much because He might get angry. So what they do is they end up limiting the amount of good that they allow in their life, not because they don't deserve it, and not because there's something wrong with them, but because they don't believe in a power that is offering them the very best of what life has to offer all the time. Now, they're usually living as well as they know how. They're trying as hard as they can, but they are enjoying life far less than they could be simply because they don't have a great enough idea of God. I mean, think how much greater the entire world could be if all of us, no matter where we lived or what religion we grew up in, started to believe in a God who was all-loving, non-judgmental, all peace, all harmony, and completely forgiving of everyone all the time and totally supportive of the most wonderful life that we can imagine. That's a good idea. But what if we started living our life as if that were true? That's the quantum leap. That's the step that we have to take. And the basis of this teaching and teachings like it, Unity and some of the other New Thought teachings, is that this is the truth. We believe that we all enter into this world having already received everything that God could possibly give us, which makes perfect sense. Not what it has given us out there, the cars and the houses and the money and the relationship and things like that, but what it has given us in here, which is much more important. We have been given the ability to create whatever life we desire. And we got it all on the moment we were born, or maybe even before that, because life never holds anything back. It doesn't give us little things now and then. If we have been given everything, the question comes in our level of awareness. Are we open to the things that we have been, that we can have, but we don't recognize yet? Because there can't be anything yet that we don't have to live the life we want. You see, life really comes to us in its entirety with two elements, two components that we have already received as our birthright. The first element is our consciousness. And when I say our consciousness, I'm talking about the same consciousness that we share with God, because there's only one. So the life that we feel, the life that I feel, is the life that you feel. It's the same life that is being expressed everywhere. That's the first. But the second part of it is the ability to make intelligent choices and to keep making them over and over again. Emmett Fox says, all we need to recognize is that we have the ability to change our mind and to keep it changed. A lot of people change their mind. January 1st, resolutions. I went to the gym the other day. It was packed. I don't mind. 6 weeks from now, it's going to be vacant. You know, that's the way it works. People change their mind. They want a new body. They want to be in shape. But then they slowly change it back to where it was. So the key is to change our mind and keep it changed, all right? The key here is we have to use our desire for a greater life, but we also have to use our intelligence. Now, of course, if we don't use our intelligence, God's not going to get mad at us, because God doesn't get mad, but we will simply experience the natural consequences of the unintelligent, unproductive, unhealthy thoughts and beliefs that we allow to stay fixed in our mind. That is what creates most of our problems. In The Science of Mind, in this section, Dr. Holmes writes this. He says, the first statement I love, he says, to learn how to think is to learn how to live. It's a great statement, very simple. For our thoughts go into a medium that is infinite in its ability to do and be. And then he says, each of us, by thinking, and when he says thinking, he's not talking intellectually here. He's talking about knowing the truth with every fiber of our being. He says, each of us, by thinking, can bring into our experience whatsoever we desire, if we think correctly, that's first, and if we become a living embodiment of our thoughts. So we have to become the belief that we have rather than just have the belief. Now, I'm not saying that we create God by the way we think, because this power, God, already exists. It's a creator that has no creator. It's the power of life. It's the desire in us to express life. It's the ability we have to express life, and it's the ability we have to enjoy life. That's something a lot of people have forgotten. And these things have existed as long as life itself has existed. But while we do not create God, we do create our relationship with God, our relationship with this creative power. And the nature of that relationship, not in God's mind, but in our mind, will determine how much good we are willing to let Spirit create for us. Everything good that comes into our life, no matter how it shows up, only appears when we believe, first, that it is consistent with God's desire for us, when we accept it with gratitude, and when we're ready to use it in a way that supports all of life in the best possible way, including our own. Of course, some people still have trouble believing in a God who is good. They look at the things that are going on in the world, and they ask the question, well, if God's so good, why is there so much evil in the world? Where do wars and genocide and disease and poverty and all these things come in? Why are so many helpless people suffering and dying unnecessary deaths? What kind of a God would allow those things to happen? Now, these are all perfectly understandable questions from a human perspective, but once again, they are based on a limited idea of God. You see, what we call evil in the world is not part of some divine plan. Evil is nothing more than ignorance. Evil is what appears in the world when we don't believe that life supports something better. We need to realize that in every disaster, natural or man-made, in the world, in that disaster, whether it's 9/11, the tsunami, the wars, whatever it happens to be, in the center of that exists the potential to create a better world than ever existed before. So what we call evil is actually the opportunity for good to appear. We have to be able to see that. So our growth, and when I say ours, I don't just mean ours individually, I mean ours together as a race, always depends upon what we learn from each experience and what we're willing to do with what we learn. God has nothing to do with it. We've been given the ability to see something better. For example, war can teach us to stop killing each other on one side of the world while we get together and start to heal what's happening on the other side of the world. Disease spreads in the world when we forget that our divine nature is to be healthy. We were given health at birth, and that we can heal ourselves whenever we forget that. Or a simpler way of saying that is, if we don't believe that a cure exists, we're not going to look for it, and consequently, we won't find it. Not only that, if we believe that sickness is a punishment from God or from this power, we're going to end up sick every time we think we're doing something that God doesn't like. And that doesn't help us. In the same way, poverty shows up in the world when we're convinced that money is evil, or when we accept the idea of a God that doesn't want us to be prosperous and free to pursue our desires. In other words, poverty comes in the world when we believe that the power that created us doesn't want to have us enjoy and celebrate the abundance that we see all around us, which makes no sense at all. If we want to expand our life, if we want to create something that truly resonates with us spiritually and experience all the possibility that life in the universe holds, we have to learn to recognize this power, not as a being that we petition, but as the power from which all things emerge. Not as the greatest power in the universe, but the only power in the universe that exists completely in each and every one of us. We need to see it as a power for good. We need to see it as unlimited. We need to see it as forever giving of itself to its creation, which means us. And we need to do this because, as Dr. Holmes writes in this section, he says, our belief sets the limit of our demonstration of a principle which is itself without limit. The limit's not in God. The limit is us. Now, one final question I want to address, and this is all the groundwork for where we're going in the next couple weeks. Can this kind of a God be a personal God? And that's important because a lot of people want to have a personal God that they can talk to. Some of them want a sugar daddy, some of them want a Santa Claus, you know, whatever. But they want somebody that they can ask and say, I know I screwed up, but please don't let me suffer the consequences of what I did to myself, okay? That's the way they think about it. Well, I believe that this power can be personal. We talk about it as an impersonal God. I believe it can be personal, but it depends on what you mean by personal. If you mean, is this the power that we can ask for special exemption from the laws of physics and the laws of the spiritual universe? Probably not. If you mean, is this a God who will give me special treatment because I go to the right church and I have his son's picture on my refrigerator? Probably not. Okay? Not that kind of personal. But if you mean by personal, a God that is always right where you are, always ready with the answer you need when we get ourselves out of the way, and never judging us based on our past behavior or our present personality, I believe it can be very personal. If you mean a loving power that works for us every time we work with it the way it works, I think it can be very personal. I believe every one of us can create a unique personal relationship with the God of our understanding that will allow us to express that God, that power, in whatever way we desire. We have to remember that spiritually speaking, which is the only way it matters, we are all part of this one same consciousness, and we all have the same ability to make conscious choices that are going to determine the direction and the quality of our life. Some power out there does not do that. We are the ones who do that. So we can all see this power in our own unique way because it is ready all the time to do for us whatever we decide is best for us. That's the power of decision that we have. So once we get it clear in our mind that God has no special plan for us except to enjoy our life and to grow, and that there's no hidden agenda that we need to figure out, there's no magic formula we need to find, then we can take our rightful place as co-creators with this power of the life that we're living. Because life is not about pleasing God, it's about understanding the nature of life itself and using everything we have been given in a way that supports our own growth and makes the world a better place for all of us, which is why we all need to believe in a God for everyone, for every single one of us. Now, next week, we're going to talk about the way this power works in the world. We're going to talk about the vehicle that it uses. We're going to expand on that. And just to give you a little hint, if you want to see the vehicle that this power uses, sometime this week, pull out your driver's license and look on it. You know, that's what you're going to see, because that's how this power works in the world, through you and through me. So I invite you to be here next week, and we will expand on that. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Take a deep breath or two. Take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others for later. And let's just simply recognize here that each one of us is an individual expression of Spirit. The power that we feel in us when we silence the busyness of our mind, when we allow our heart to start to stop aching for what does not exist and to recognize in gratitude what does, when we see the best of our family and our friends, when we see the beauty of our children, the dignity of our parents, the love that those around us are trying to express and that we accept, and as we begin to stop looking at all the worst parts of the world and recognize that the best is always yet to come. As we begin to change the way that we see the world because we change the way that we recognize the power within us, life transforms. Limitations fall away. Fear recedes into the background. And we begin to get excited. We begin to wake up in the morning excited to be alive, recognizing that no one is against us, nothing is trying to stop us, that all the power we need to grow is within. And this power is always present, always supports us, never rests. So let's take a few moments in the silence of our own heart and mind. And in this silence today, simply recognize the presence of this power as a loving, caring, supportive power that is completely within us and fills every single cell of our body. Take these few moments for yourself and know that truth. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own. We accept this presence within us all the time. We remember this feeling. We are grounded in it. We are able to return to it whenever we desire. We can go back to the silence and the peace of our own inner understanding and change the way we see whatever is going on outside of us. As we recognize this power and this presence, we become completely at peace. That peace stays with us because it is what we are. It's not something we have. And with a deep appreciation for all that we have been given and all that we have yet to give to life and to receive from life, we leave this place today with this new idea firmly embedded in our consciousness. We accept it completely. and we release it now, allowing it to go out from us, to spread throughout the world, to touch every person that we meet, everyone we know, every thought we have, every place we go. This is the power we have. We embrace it, we rejoice in it, and so it is.